Hi, I'm Ryan Wilkie.
And I'm Jason Rutherford, the creator of the Online Armor Showcase. And tonight, we're in the middle of a HeroScape battle here, so I thought, well, let's go ahead and talk about that, about some of the scenarios we played recently for HeroScape in this episode of the Tabletop Battlefield. Episode 16 of the Tabletop Battlefield, the official podcast, the Online Army Showcase at army.rocklesoftware.com. And as I mentioned just a minute ago in the intro, Ryan and I have been playing some more HeroScape recently. I finally got out to our local Target store and actually picked up some of the Wave 6 boosters, which I believe have been out for a couple months, but I'd never noticed them recently. So, got us back into playing HeroScape. So, we started about last Sunday or so, started with some different scenarios. I created one first that I've actually posted on the Online Army Showcase, is a Capture the Flag one. And now we're in the middle of Ryan's scenario here, where it's a castle assault scenario. So let's go ahead. We're going to start first with my Capture the Flag scenario. And the associated web pages on the Online Armor Showcase is just army.rocklesoftware.com/HeroScape_CTF, and that's all lowercase. So, let's see. I guess to describe the battlefield, you can see there's pictures of it here. It's actually a fairly nondescript battlefield. There wasn't anything too, you know, unique about it. It's just kind of
you didn't really need it, though. No. It just all you needed was a flag up there. And that was really fun. It came down to the wire. And of course, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
But, oh, yeah. But I got my tails and my heroic victory sort of. No, I'm just kidding. I got a little log here of the different. Of what
you know,
exactly
it was pretty much a stalemate because you did not get that flag to your side. It was more on my side. So
you basically made a run for it. I just happened to catch up with you and snipe your guy and drop the flag. I dropped the flag. You dropped the flag.
But we'll
get to our crazy stories about that in just a minute. So it's the whole battlefield of this type of scenario is pretty standard. It's about, you just obviously want kind of a squarish battlefield. But the big feature is, about the middle of the battlefield, towards one side, there's going to be a small castle. The castle is about the size of, it's about the smallest castle you could possibly build. So it's about, I think, about 9 hexes around, and it's only one layer in the front, and one layer in the back, or 2 layers in the back. The picture's obviously on the website as I'm talking about this. And the idea was, across the main middle of the battlefield, we randomly distributed some of the glyph tiles. And, picked it right up. And one of the glyphs here, obviously the one they use for the artifact glyph, the glyph of Brandar, it's used several times in other scenarios to represent a special item you gotta find. And that represented a key. And the point of the key was to unlock the door. So, initially, our forces scrambled from the sides to the middle where we kind of searched for some of the glyphs. And actually, search a glyph is a little bit different than in normal HeroScape where you just gotta walk and stand on it. It was actually, at the end of your turn, if you're standing on the glyph and there's no enemies around you, then you could reveal it. If it was anything but the glyph of Brandar, we just didn't care and toss it out. So we weren't using all the special effects of the glyphs. We were just interested in finding that one and only one that held the key. So whoever found the key, in this case it was one of Ryan's figures, we'll talk about the battle in just a little bit, but yes, he found the key, and then that basically allows you to rush up to the door of the castle and open it. And the reason you need the key to open the door is because in and around the castle, all your flying and special movement abilities are completely negated. So you can't just have a little dragon guy fly up the top and grab the flag.
You have to go through the door, right?
Yeah. You have to go through the door. So that means like the stealth flying, like what these little shades have, or, you know, the dragons, they don't get any special advantages. In fact, they're actually kind of hindered because I tried to get Nilfheim in the castle, and he couldn't fit in the door in the castle. So he couldn't go up after the flag. But anyway,
thank God.
Yes. So then you have to run to the top of the castle, grab the flag, basically bring it back down, and get it back to your side of the base. It seems relatively simple, but it turned out to be a lot more complex than that. So the forces were the following: we each start off with 500 points on the board. I play the good guys. I usually do. You play the bad guys. So we'll talk about our armies in just a second. And then we had 1,000 points of reserve. And how the reserve forces worked is when one of the army cards you currently had out basically got destroyed and removed from play, you took an army card from your reserve pile, and you choose whichever one you wanted to call out, place it down, and then you went ahead and basically that character entered the field of battle on your side of the battlefield and just kind of raced out and fought. And the last little special rule was dealing with the key and the flag. If the key or the flag carrier was killed, basically, the key or the flag kind of drops wherever they were, and it becomes a free-for-all. Yep, you said a free-for-all. And whoever moves that hex grabs a key or the flag, and they take off going wherever they want. So that became really very hectic at the very end. So let's talk about first about our initial strategies. Like what you, let's hear about what was your strategy going into the event? What were you trying to do exactly? How are you? Or how are you executing your plan? I should say. How is your objective was to capture the flag, but how are you going to execute it?
Well, executing kind of hard to remember that. I do remember, of course, first finding the glyph, which was easy to find because it was right on my side, like
You got lucky there.
Yeah, right close to my guys. So that didn't take long to do.
That's your samurai warriors that did that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then just basically keeping the samurai warriors out of any battle and inch them like to the castle without really you noticing, and keep you busy with my other guys.
I kind of noticed, but I was just a bit tied up. But go ahead.
Well, that's
your point, right? Obviously. Dang Krug.
He didn't last very long, though.
Oh, he
did. Not as long as I wanted him to. I made a really bad move with him.
Well, you facing off against a dragon, Major Q9, like two other guys at the same time. So, but go ahead.
Just basically. Getting, because by the time I got the one ninja up there, up in the castle with the...
Samurai. Samurai's ninjas are different.
Whatever.
People get irritated about that. Samurai versus ninja. It's an ancient...
Samurai. Samurai. I'm sorry if I offended anybody who has ninja or samurai heritage.
Not as big as ninjas were
spies. I worked all night last night. I'm working tonight. Mm-hmm. Give me a break.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. Keep going.
Basically, I I unlocked the door and took a while because I was just trying to nonchalantly just get the samurai up into the castle and not grab the key because I didn't want to grab the key right away, and then you all of a sudden rushed toward me. I was trying to make a perimeter. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you took a photo of that, but if you did, you could probably show it during this
Keep talking and I'll thumb through the pictures I got here. Keep talking.
And I just... Basically,
all the pictures are on the website, by the way, that I took. So,
yeah, I started making a perimeter, which Jason did a pretty good job of destroying it as much as possible. But at the very end, to where we were like running out of guys, I finally
there's a guy running at the castle.
Okay,
I was able to grab the flag, making a run for it.
I was able to have the guy come down and grab the key at the. You just gotta wait for the best moment, and if it comes down to where you have no choice,
nope, there you guys getting cut down.
Yeah, you just gotta go for it. But yeah, basically was what I was waiting for.
Okay, so well, I guess I'll talk a little bit about my tactics then. It's kind of the same idea. I was obviously trying to find the glyph right off the bat, as you would expect me to do. And I actually had a totally different plan. My first guys were a lot of fast guys out there. Who did I have? Initially, I had the Vidar agents. I usually bring out Raylan, but she didn't come out right at the start. I had a few flying. You know, I don't remember who I had out.
I don't really. All I remember is the basics of what I did.
Okay, I got the picture of both of our armies that we started off with.
Who's who?
Okay, you had the shades out for, and you had the orc hero who the little boar guy. You had Mimring, Krug, your samurai, and the little pack rat things, these Solberg rats.
Mm-hmm. Which really didn't do much until the end.
Until the very end. That's when they... stupid rats.
Yeah, that's what I was saving them for. Mm-hmm. I mean, just... Really? Well, they were fast-moving, and they're just meant to deter anybody who would follow if that would happen, and it did happen. And then all my big guys, I had all my big guys out, so they would distract you from, like, the samurai from getting the flag and taking it down.
So okay, my army was the Vidar agents. I had the Vikings too. I took those guys. They have the fancy little rush thing where they can roll a die, get a certain value, they double their movement, or essentially make a second move. So I wanted the speed. I had the griffin, the little, I don't know, is he sitting around here? Oh, probably was in the box, but you know, it's from the Ragnar's Vision set that comes with Nilfheim and some of the other big figures.
Wait. What was it?
This guy here. This little flying, the griffon. But he's probably in one of the boxes laying around here. But anyway, also Savirus, my elf archer. He's basically a staple in any of my armies. pings people off like crazy. And then, of course, the last guys I had initially were the Airborne Elite. And they were the initial part of my goal, was to actually, obviously, airdrop them in, which I did in the first turn, and try to uncover as many glyphs as they possibly could.
Didn't work.
And they uncovered 4 of the 9 glyphs, and none of them were the key. But
sometimes luck has a lot to do with it. Yes. Luck is very good when you got that.
The theory was there, but it just didn't work out quite the way it was supposed to. The Vikings actually were lined up on the castle edge. They ran ahead and tried to just secure the castle in case he did try to, in case Ryan did get the key and tried to make a run for it initially.
Mm-hmm. And that stopped me for a couple moves because they were really hard to defeat.
And then Krug.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Krug took care of him pretty fast.
The Vitar agents just for the sniping ability, but the whole idea was basically get as many troops out in this middle area as I could and basically just try to search as many glyphs as I possibly can. But when the closest glyph to you is the key, there wasn't a whole lot I could do about that. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think just one little funny story about that key thing that I found. So it's actually this little golden key, and I honestly had no idea where it came from. Did Matt ever tell you the story behind it?
No.
Because, you know, over here, right by our entrance, but you know there's a little piece of molding on the ground that is broken loose?
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of rip out of the way. It's hidden under there. So apparently, whoever lived in this townhouse before we did, apparently it's a key to a safe or something. That'd be kind of cool if it's still in here. We should check the attic. But there's like some secret hidden safe away. It's got like $1 million of gold in it. Like, that's a little key.
I don't count on it. We would be that lucky.
You never know. If we've never been up the attic, I have no idea what's up there.
We have an attic in here?
Yeah, there's an entryway in my bedroom closet.
From
an attic. Like, there could be a dead body out there for all I know, but wow. I think I'd smell it.
Yeah, probably would.
But anyway, so after you made the run for the castle, I tried to block you, and it worked for a while, and essentially Krug kind of came and smashed my forces back and kind of boxed me in the corner.
Yeah.
And that's when you made your samurai made the run up for it, which... Mm-hmm.
Oh, I was keeping all you guys busy, and I wanted to make sure, like, some of them were dead, because some of them could leave engagements and still attack, so I was waiting for the opportune moment. And one point I want to make is the how you were counting on speed. Since it was such a small area, for me, speed didn't really matter as much as just more tactical. Because it was like half this space pretty much.
The area where all the glyphs were the 2 24 hex gray things put together and a few other little things stuck on it. So it was a pretty small area to race up in there. Mm-hmm. But okay, so now let's talk about how things for you is going pretty well the entire battle, except to the very end. So why don't you explain how things just kind of unfortunately fell apart for you?
It was the worst amount of luck I had.
I should say this though. It was actually the whole battle at least I thought was going kind of bad for you the whole battle because I almost was winning the war of attrition, but it really came down a lot closer than I expected.
Besides the fact that I pretty much had the flag the whole time, or I was closest to the flag.
Your guy who got the key like the second turn of the game had the flag until almost the last couple turns before I finally hunted him down.
And kind of game like Capture the Flag, like the number of forces don't really matter as long as you have the advantage of you have the flag and you have the means of getting it to your destination.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I was waiting for. I had no clue it would come down to where it was just like going to be one figure in against one figure in.
War of attrition, yeah.
Oh my gosh! And it was a really cool ending. It really came up to where. Jason's forces end up wiping all mine out, but it was just like one against one. But the flag was like three spaces away from where it needed to be on my side. So we need to redo that again.
I think we'll try that again. It was a lot of fun. We'll try to switch sides and I'll put the evil guys for once. You put the good guys.
Mm-hmm.
Because essentially, you know what happened? Your samurai who had the key and the flag most of the time made his run back to the base.
Mm-hmm.
But who was it? The female agents. They're, I don't remember.
They stop.
What's their names? Nikita agents or something. They're basically the female versions of the of the Vidar agents. And they actually raced across the board and shot down your samurai, pegged him, killed him, and then your dang rats came out.
Yeah, the hounds. The hounds beat him too. Pretty good. Yeah. The hounds. And then I had Mara warrior that was just hanging out in the background, wasn't even doing anything for like the first half of the game. It was just, you know, somewhere just waiting to peg somebody, and he came up and started pegging him off, and that's how I got him off. The hounds ended up being all killed, and it was just my Mara warrior that was left.
Because the hounds got the flag after they killed my agents, and then I had the Massachusetts soldiers, the 74th Massachusetts. They came up, they shot your little hounds down, right?
Yeah, no. There was a creature blocking them. Was there? I think it was one of my orc warriors.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they shot an orc. They killed him. And they ran past them. Mm-hmm. And then they shot. I think they shot your rats. And then then your dang Mara warrior killed those. Grabbed the flag. Mm-hmm. And the one Viking champion is the one who chased you down to the very end.
Mm-hmm. And I did. It was like your Viking was so far away. We thought it was over.
I was ready. I'm going to give up. Then I sat down and counted the spaces out. I'm like, wait a minute, I can actually still do this.
You have a chance. You had the dice roll, and it was one shot out of a million, and guess what? He got it. I'm just like, oh my God. I think that's what I like about these games the most, is you never know when the game or the battle is going to turn, you know, against you. And sometimes you can use all the tactics you want, and sometimes it's just plain dumb luck.
So one thing I'd say in the very end, then, obviously, your Mara warrior made it just to the very end. He actually water cloned to try to delay me for a turn, but I still was able to jump, because the very edge of the board were actually two water spaces right in a row. Mm-hmm. So a single hex-based unit would actually have to spend two turns trying to get in there. And that's the idea to make them vulnerable. And unfortunately, it came back to bite you, because I got in the one water space, killed your guy or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I just was fortunately able to actually...
I really don't see that as you winning either. I see it as you...
stealing the glory at the very last second.
Yeah, I just felt satisfied with the fact that I actually got the flag, because, I mean, you're a tactical genius when it comes to this kind of stuff, and I'm still learning, and I was able to... I never thought I would get that close.
You control the game almost the entire freaking time, and just the very last little bits, my fortune... Because, I mean, I honestly thought I was going to win a lot quicker, because, I mean, I felt at least... until the very end, when they started falling apart on me, that I had like the war of attrition against you. I was slowly pushing back. Because a lot of times your guy was trapped in the castle because my guys were at the front gate fighting you off. But I just couldn't get anybody in there to go up and kill the
samurai. Because I had at least one or two guys that were just there, and they kept you at bay.
Like I mentioned, I tried to get Nilfheim in there, but he went to defend the darn castle.
Who ended up killing him?
It might have been the orc warriors or something.
Yeah, I think it was like
these guys combined. Yeah, your orc warriors and Grimmick. Mm-hmm. Because they did a lot of damage.
They have a pretty deadly combination together. Yeah, and I didn't realize it until the middle of the game. I'm just like, I'm so glad to have these guys together, because that really helped. Yeah, it did.
See, if you don't know, the orc warriors have the orc champion bonding, which essentially allows them, before they move, to move an orc champion. And Grimmick, from the starter set, the giant dinosaur-looking creature, is an orc champion. So, I mean, that was just absolutely vicious to me. I mean, he started eating out my little knights, and then he gulped, like, two of my heroes. It's like, oh, no, this is going south.
But that helped.
Those guys are the ones who really turned the tide of the battle for you. Because initially, you know, you attacked... And you boxed me in the corner. Your samurai made a run for it. I broke out and guarded the castle. Then you boxed me back in. Your samurai made a run for it, and they came down to a little sniper fire. But so, anything? What would you do differently if you fought the battle next time?
Well, it depends on whether or not I got the good guys or the bad guys.
Let's say you had the bad guys. So
if I have the bad guys, well,
same arm. Would you use the same army or different army?
I might modify the army a little bit. But especially now, knowing, because I mean, a lot of these creatures, you always get new guys. Mm-hmm. So when you do, you don't realize what kind of special abilities they have until you play them. And now that I know some of their special abilities, I'll be able to use them a little bit better next time we play for it. But as far as that goes, I mean, finding the glyph right away, like that really. That set the course. I mean, sometimes you just got to go along with the flow, and if something happens like that, then you change your tactics to whatever. Like, if you wouldn't have gotten the key, obviously I would have had to change my tactics mm-hmm. then from what they were. So,
at least for my army, I'd say a lot of it worked pretty well. No one really caused any real problems for me or total points waste. Like, I mean, I like the idea of dropping my airborne lead in the start. Fortunately, they just didn't do anything, but the theory was there. No, I made one critical mistake, and that was when I assigned my order tokens out. You know, you got the little X decoy one. I accidentally put that on my knights, I wanted to put them on my knights, because I have my knights plus Sir Dendrick out there, who, you know, is the bonding champion, really. Mm-hmm. But I put, like, the two on some random guy I totally screwed up, and my knights and Sir Dendrick lost an entire turn, and that was right at the end when all your orcs are cleaning house. And that just, that one little mistake really messed up my end game, but...
Happens.
Yeah, it happens. So, well, enough of that scenario. Why don't you go ahead, the scenario we got in front of you here is your castle assault scenario that you designed. So why don't you go ahead, you got a whole page of rules over there, just kind of briefly summarize those, describe the battlefield, and we'll start talking about that a little bit.
Well, I practiced this scenario when I first started playing the game, and... The concept seemed fun. It's pretty much
taking pictures, Laura, for the
basically describing it.
Taking pictures as we're filming the podcast quality.
You're facing it's by chance. You're either I call it siege and defend. You're either sieging a castle that's minimally guarded, or you're defending the castle with minimum numbers against the whole horde of either evil guys or good guys that are laying siege. And it's pretty much just fighting a no-win situation. Mm-hmm. And seeing how long you can last, if you can last till when reinforcements arrive, and if you can keep the beasties or good guys off for as long as you possibly can. Should I say how we start?
Well, again, just describe the overall layout of the battlefield here, how you got the whole... It's a very, you know, long battlefield. Mm-hmm. Explains why you chose certain terrain features, and you got the little water ways here to constrict me, and then the dang lava stairs that are wreaking havoc.
Mm-hmm. That just makes... I mean, because you have, like, if you're the guy who's sieging the castle, you don't want to make it easy for them. You want to make it to where they have obstacles they have to go through. Like, I have... the glyphs are actually mines, which mm-hmm. I can explain a little bit later, but...
Just a minute here.
The waterways, you got the lava flows, and you have this area of the castle, which it looks accessible, you know, pretty easy accessible, but you have all these lava flows to where if you, like, stay down for a second, you can get... cleared out pretty quickly.
It's completely incinerated.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you just... And then you have, like, on this side, perfectly clear, you have the gate, which you got to hit, pound on so many times in order to get it open. So you just got to judge and see which one is the best.
So talk about first of choosing our sides, because, you know, we didn't actually pick our armies or our sides. Mm-hmm. So
no, that's too easy.
Too easy, yeah, because... First time I play the bad guys in this one. First time, well, at least against me, first time you play the good guys.
Yeah, you're very good with the bad guys, too. You've learned a lot. But basically what I wrote down is you start with two players, and let's see here. You start... I can't even read my own writing for crying out loud.
But yeah, you randomly choose sides, right? So, mm-hmm. What do you roll first? Decide
at first. Players, I'm just reading what I'm writing.
Okay. Go for it.
First, the two players roll the 20-sided die to see what goes first. The highest number goes first, and the highest gets to roll for the location. So let's just roll the dice real quick. Do we have it?
There it is. Up in front here. Okay. 12.
So Jason rolls a 12, and I roll.
18.
So, if we were going to be playing it, I have the highest, so I'd be rolling for what location? And let's say I roll a 10. So, I would get the castle. And basically what I have is you roll the dice and you...
20.
And you get 20. And you would be... Let's see, what army do you get?
So basically it works down to, is a 50-50 chance on which side of the battlefield you're going to be on, and 50-50 chance whether you're going to be good or evil, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, let's say we rolled the dice, and you get, like, I roll the dice for location,
mm-hmm.
a 1, a 2, 5, 6, 9, 10, 13, 14, 17, 18. Those numbers get the castle. You get to defend the castle. And then the other numbers, you get to siege the castle.
Okay.
And then you rolled a 20, mm-hmm. so you would get the evil army, and I would get the good one. So it'd pretty much be the same scenario that
so
we have right now.
So evil would be sieging the good castle. Okay. Mm-hmm. Makes sense. So what next question we had were the landmines. Mm-hmm. Talk about those. Those can be a headache if you, unless you can figure out I found a small loophole to kind of get around them. But.
Yeah, they can be, and strategically, I'm
it
not going to
be a nightmare for the defender, but
yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to say much about them because it still be like, what they pretty much do is they're called proximity landmines. And any figure that walks over or flies over or is adjacent to them, it will arm the mine. Let's just say your ghost comes by.
Mm-hmm.
And that will pretty much arm the mine if it's adjacent or if it walks on it. And the mine will be armed, and what you... Where was your figure at?
I don't wanna... Oh, like right there, I think.
And then what you would do is roll the die, and let's say you get a 19... let's see here. You roll 1 through 5 or 10 through 15, the mine explodes, and the figure's automatically destroyed. It doesn't matter what figure it is, it doesn't matter what special ability it has.
It can be rough.
It doesn't matter, it's screwed. And then any... I just felt like saying that.
It works, it's what happens.
Then any other figure that's in range of two spaces of the, like, circular... two spaces of the mind gets how many?
I think was it two or is it one? I think it's one.
Just one, yeah. And it's one unblockable hit against it. So you can wipe out your players pretty fast if you don't if you're not thinking really strategically. But let's say if you don't roll a 1 through 5 or 10 through 15, you roll a 6 through 9 or a 16 through 20. Like I did, I roll a 19. You get to keep the you disarm your. Figure disarms the mine, and you get to take the mine to your player's card, and your figure, or let's say you have three figures to a card, any of those figures can use that mine, or you pretty much it turns into a grenade against your figures, and they count as how many? Two unblockable hits against the figure. And you did a pretty good job wiping out.
I tossed stuff like, I think captured from like. Three of the mines mm-hmm. with my Marl Warriors, and I bombed two of them on top of Sergeant Drake, and then I eviscerated somebody else with the third one. I don't know.
And let's say if the figures that are carrying the grenades, they all die, you cannot use the grenades. If they mm-hmm. haven't been used, you cannot use them. You can't switch them or anything like that. And you can't... The distance is only three spaces, the throwing distance, and you cannot lob them like you could with the
airborne elite grenades.
Yeah, the airborne elite grenades.
So essentially, it's the target has to be three movement spaces away. So mm-hmm. you know, so if you're higher up, like two elevations, then you only can really go one space.
Exactly.
And that and the use of grenade is substitute the normal attack, right?
That's a good question.
I think it's how we're playing it. That's how I assume we're playing it. So Marvel Warriors would toss a grenade and then it'd be done and wouldn't shoot at you, so.
Yeah, okay, yeah. That we'll make that as a rule.
That works. Get the pen out, scribble it in, now it's official. So, and then is there any other real special rules about it then? Or is it, talk about the reinforcements, how they come in, because eventually one side's got to start getting some reinforcements. Or,
yeah, well, like, theory. You see it now, right now, Jason's done a pretty good job of wiping my guys out. Like, I started with, 15 or 20 or so guys, and I'm left with only three.
Q9, Dang Ghost, Agent Carr, and one of the little Vixen agents. Mm-hmm. Nikita.
And that's one of the things I would change again. I didn't realize starting the game that you could hit guys like... I didn't think you could hit them right off the.
Some you can, depends on the angle, because the thing does block some of the guys, but mm-hmm. fortunately some of them are a little too tall to hide behind those things.
Mm-hmm. So I'll change my strategy next time if I'm defending next time. But yeah, good guys, they get, I think I discussed it before, good guys, well, let's say you're defending the castle, and you end up with good guys, you start with only 900 points worth of figures when defending until help arrives. And when help, how many turns does it take? It takes 10 turns.
Mm-hmm. It's in the beginning of the 11th turn then. Mm-hmm.
Starting at the 11th turn, you, before the game, you choose 800 points worth of reinforcements. The opposing player will gets to mix up the cards, so mm-hmm. you can't choose what order they come in. It's pretty much by random. And after 10 turns into the game, the defending player picks up a card every other turn. So right now we are in turn 11, and I picked up my first card, mm-hmm. and it's who's this guy?
Sir Dendrick.
Yeah, Sir Dendrick, which is a pretty good guy to have come in. And then not next turn, but the turn after, I'll be able to pick up another card, and so you'll have it a little bit tougher. You didn't wipe out all my guys. It's a little bit easier when the siege person gets to wipe everything out, and then.
So what about the guys I'm attacking with then? How many? Because I know, like, you allowed to use all our entire army attacking.
Mm-hmm.
Did you sit down and calculate how many points that was? Because
it's pretty much
2,000-ish, was it?
Yeah, I think with the new bad guys, like, I want to mm-hmm. count those right now.
I haven't looked at them yet. Go ahead.
Because that makes it like 300 or 400 points more.
Mm-hmm.
Of what the bad guys have than what the good guys have, but it's pretty much an even score.
So yes, so it's probably about say 2,000 points for the attackers, and then a total 1,700 over time for the defenders.
Mm-hmm.
So then, okay, let's just go ahead and just talk a little bit about tactics. I might as well dive in first here, because as I mentioned, I was playing the evil army. And my little loophole I kind of got through his landmines was the Morrow Warriors. Of course, if you're probably familiar with those, you know they have the water clone ability where they can just reproduce themselves. Perfectly able to sacrifice themselves, and they can just reproduce themselves right back in the battlefield. And that's what I did. I pretty much gave all my orders to the Morrow Warriors. Which, by the way, why don't you explain the dual order tokens?
Yes. You can use two sets.
Yeah. Two sets of the little 1, 2, 3s and X's. So essentially you get 6 actions mm-hmm. for each turn.
And it makes the game go a little bit faster, and you don't have to declare which one is going first. Let's say you have the number one marker. Like, you got 2 number one markers, and you put them on 2 different figures. You don't have to declare which one goes first. If you go second in the turn, and it's better strategically for you mm-hmm. to move one guy than the other, then you can go ahead and use that guy.
And of course, when I move both the number ones, and you'd use both your number ones, then my number twos, both your number twos, mm-hmm. and back and forth. So mm-hmm. it's basically 2 actions at a time. But yeah, as I was saying, I went ahead and just kind of blasted the landmines with the Mara Warriors, grabbing as many as I can. And so 2 would run through the minefields, and 2 would hang back in the rivers back here and just keep water cloning. So at least they lasted long enough to clear through the minefield and take down a few people in front of them, because they had the grenades and just went...
That's in the way.
It is kind of in the way. After they had the grenades, they started lobbing the grenades and blowing stuff up left and right and kill a few guys that way. And that just allowed me to get... My second guys that got through were the various Solbergs. You got the Deathwalker 9000 and his 2 little Solberg guard buddies. Because, you know, the Solberg guard buddies, when they're adjacent to him, have a 9 range attack. So the first target was take out Savaris, his archer sitting up there, and they managed to do that. And then basically it's kind of free range to shoot the rest of his range guys. They outranged most of them. And just kind of slowly pegged them off one by one. And the other guys that stormed the castle were my Utgar's minions. You know, they have little demon-looking flying guys, and they have a nice solid defense and decent attack. And they actually flew up onto the castle walls, ripped through a few more people, but unfortunately they had a string of really crappy defense rolls. About all 3 of them they suffered only like a one like damage attack or something. It's a one wound attack, and all three of them just couldn't roll a single defense die in six defense dice.
It just happens.
Couldn't do it. And they all three died a little bit quicker than I would have liked, but it did clear out quite a bit of stuff. So at this point now, the rest of my army is slowly moving up. I got my shades up here, because they're another flying guy to try to assault. And obviously, they have the soul devour ability. I can take over some of their unique figures. I still got left over there. And that's basically my plan at this point, is I'm rushing up as many guys as I can and trying to just flood it. Because my Deathwalker is slowly climbing the lava steps over there. The Soulbird guards are coming up. And then I got my lava men here who can actually climb that pretty well. Grimmick and his orc guards move together. The little rats are running around fast, and they got a bunch of other guys ready to move up. So,
and I pretty much took this scenario from, if any of you folks watching are Lord of the Rings fans, I pretty much took this scenario where Mordor lays siege to Gondor, which is just like totally...
Helm's Deep?
Well, Helm's Deep too, but pretty much a Mordor against Gondor type battle, and where they have castle walls, but Mordor's like there and just, you know, bashing him. But yeah, it's.
So why don't you talk your tactics a little bit too? So
my tactics pretty much sucked. I at least I learned. I learned what not to do, because
it's always a good thing. Mm-hmm. Always definitely a good thing.
I've learned how to keep guys maybe a little bit further back. Maybe not even up on here. Maybe just one or two. And just have them back here waiting for everybody else to siege in. And I had like guys here in the beginning, and they got pegged off pretty quickly. Took care of them pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. I had some good guys. It could have been great if I just kept them back here. So yeah, I'm pretty much just hoping, just praying that I'm just gonna last as long as I freaking can. And now that I have reinforcements coming in, it'll be a little bit more interesting.
So one guy that's been on top that has done a lot of good is your Major Q9, his Quillis gun. Because I just can't...
And the great thing
just
about...
He's paying guys off left and right. I just can't hurt him because it's freaking rock-solid defense.
Like this, the agent...
Yeah, Agent Carr.
Agent Carr and... what do you call this dude?
It's Major Q9.
Major Q9. They don't have any hits on him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's one good thing. And then we
I've fired at him a lot, but we have another, gives him his 8 defense.
We have another hero that doesn't have any hits on him either that'll come in and help. And then I have one of the agent chicks that will probably get pegged within the next couple of turns, but you know she's still there. So I pretty much haven't really let anybody enter the castle yet. I'm drawing the line here as long as I can.
It's holding. It's still holding.
Yeah. For how long? Who knows? We'll find out.
My one question, obviously, regarding your tactics is, how come Raylan's not out there? I mean, I would have, like, say, stuck her, a little bit on one of these ladders back here so she can still see everybody and give them and boost up their defense like crazy.
That's something I probably would change if I would do it next time. Raylan won't come. She's actually in the people that's coming for reinforcements. The what would you call it? Knights of Rohan, if you want to call it that.
And I like the idea you're saying how keep a lot of guys down in there, because that's probably what I would have done too, just because you had the Massachusetts line up there. Who else did you have?
I had everybody up there.
Yeah, and the problem was my guys outrange you. These little 7 guys just picked you off, and then that thing fired up there as long as the range and blew everybody.
Major Q9 couldn't take care of these guys at all. It just didn't happen.
So if I had to say bash through the door, it had a nice choke point where you could just kind of swarm around me and attack. Or over there, you could keep them right by the ladder, so if they got up there, eventually you could choke point them there. But
yeah, well, I just have to change my tactics a little bit now because I don't have much guys to work with and just keep on fighting till the death, pretty much. Which
it's really a fun scenario to play, though.
Oh yeah, it's intense. I mean, that's why I like playing these things.
I wonder, like, in the case of these landmines back here, if you weren't the evil guys with the Morrow Warriors, who would you have sent through those landmines if you had said good guys?
If it was the other way around?
Yeah,
you were the evil guys defending, I was the good guys.
Because who would you have? Because you have to obviously almost sacrifice somebody.
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
that would be
the Vikings are pretty cheap, but they're kind of, and that's you're still looking to lose. You know, well, it's.
I What I'd probably start out, I'd start out with my, the army dudes, what's the name?
Airborne Elites?
Yeah, the Airborne Elites. I'd probably start out with them and see if I could get them airborne into this area and start raising a little bit of havoc. But,
dropping in the castle right away.
I'd probably have to sacrifice some guys, but I probably would pretty much just do what you did and cause a straight line in there so you can get guys slowly pressing on in there.
Well, and if I were to command the evil guys defending the castle, I would have to start with, Memory would have to come out initially, I think, just because he can fly up on top, do a flame breath, fly back down, fly back up, flame breath, do as much damage as you possibly can.
I'm glad I took care of Memring early, too.
Yes. He pegged a few guys, but you took him down, because I've totally forgot that Q9's range is 8. I thought it was only 7. It's like, I am safe here. No, I'm
nope.
not.
Boom!
Well, thought was there.
That was a little bit lucky.
And I mean, probably other than that, the only guys I might have mounted the castle with evil guys would be the lava guys here who would hide on the lava steps.
That's one great thing about the lava steps is you can have those guys there if you have evil guys defending it. And that's another thing I like about putting that there.
And maybe you have 3 Mara warriors out and 1 in the back who can always try to water clone itself back to existence.
That's why there's a little bit of lake there and ponds there. So.
But most of the guys, the guys assembling the evil guys' armies, the first time I played at them, like, you don't have a lot of ranged guys. I noticed that. The good guys have a boatload. I'm like, That's why I kind of botched his archers over there to give you some more ranged units. But
you can't use those.
No, I know.
And you won't be able to use those.
At least not in this game. Battle,
but. Next game, if you get the bad guys again, you'll be able to. But
all right, well, that's about it for the HeroScape scenarios. Here we're getting close to the normal end of the show. So let's see, any last little news and notes I have. Obviously, last night Kyle and I played our first battle with our Mechwar Aerospace fighters, which last episode I showed you guys how to build them. I actually got them done here, all painted up and on really kind of crew little bases.
And what are those about?
This for the MechWarrior Age of Destruction board game. The one you see us playing last night with all the little the infantry guys and tanks running around the table there.
Okay.
That's that, because these are a totally own addition to the rules, because the aerospace fighters are part of the universe, of the MechWarrior universe, but they never put them in the game.
Mm.
So we're having fun just testing out some of our own rules with them, and they're actually quite powerful, so we got to tone them down a little bit. They just kind of fly in and level a few tanks, Well, it definitely changes the game, because you can't hide or turtle or anything, and these guys can pick off individual units that are and create chokehold points. Oh, phone ringing.
It's my alarm.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll finish this up in just a minute then. So I guess just check out the MechWarrior Aerospace page at army.rockosoftware.com/MW Aerospace, all lowercase. Where I'll be keeping track of the rules, and I'll be posting the pictures for the actual creating these kind of crummy little bases pretty shortly here. And I think with that, I want to leave you with one last little fun news note that's just something that I told Kyle about last night, and his brain almost exploded. But it just, there's a survey was taken a little bit ago, and apparently 20% of adult Americans do not know that the Earth revolves around the sun.
Huh?
So with that, let that fester in your brain for about 2 weeks and possibly cause an aneurysm. So if you're still alive again in about 2 weeks, I'll see you then. Have a good night.
Copyright 2007, Rocco Software. HeroScape, copyright 2004, Hasbro.
The intro music, down with everything, was by The Transformers, acquired from www.podsafeaudio.com.